May the peace of Christ be with you. This is Molly Vetter, Senior Pastor of the Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles. Welcome to our Sanctuary Gathering podcast. Here we share the sermon preached on Sunday as a part of our Sanctuary Gathering. We hope that in these words you will be drawn closer to God and made more ready to love your neighbor. As a congregation, we embrace the words of the Hebrew prophet that are etched into the stairs that lead to our building, the calling to do justice, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with our God. We also believe that we're a richer congregation for the diversity of people who participate in our community, and we celebrate the diversity of age, race, gender identity, and sexual orientation that participate in our church. You are welcome in this place, and we hope you will participate. We invite you to do your own theology, to wrestle with questions of faith as we seek out what it means to be faithful Christians today. You're welcome to join us not only by listening in to this podcast, but we also invite you to join in our congregational life. Every Sunday, you're welcome to join us for worship at 9:30 a.m. You can join us in our beautiful sanctuary in Los Angeles at the corner of Warner and Wilshire, or online via our church Facebook page. All are welcome in our midst, and we thank you for being a part of our church. May these moments be a blessing to you today.
Good morning, Westwood United Methodist Church. It is a full house. Very excited for you all to be here. This is our combined service. And now, see, the challenge is we have regular loft people used to getting here a little bit late. And so now they're wondering, where are we going to sit? This is kind of our tradition, is to show up about 5 to 10 minutes late. So, but we will put out some extra seats just in case. There should be some seating in the back. We'll make sure we put out some more seats. We anticipated it was going to be a full house, and we are very excited to have you all here. For those of you who don't know, my name is Reverend Dr. Christopher Carter. I am the lead pastor of the Loft community. I am the associate pastor here at Westwood United Methodist Church. The Loft is a conversational community. And so what that means is sometime during worship, actually we're going to have two opportunities today for y'all to engage in conversation with people at your tables. We do this for a couple of reasons. Lots of reasons, actually. The primary reason, I should say, we do it, though, is because we believe that we are doing constructive theology. We are learning about God together. It's not just me and Pastor Molly up here dispensing theological kernels of wisdom, although we do that. It is also us collectively in conversation with each other, learning from each other, recognizing that God is still speaking to us and God is still moving in this place. You should also know that Westwood, but particularly the Loft, we are a community that welcomes all people, regardless of race, religion, regardless of belief or unbelief, sexual orientation, class status, or whatever. We want you to know that, we want you to feel welcome here, but ultimately we want you to know that and create a space where you feel as though you belong here. That is something that we prioritize in so many different ways. And I'm excited for the conversation we are having today because we really are talking about expanding our logics of belonging. So we are continuing our sermon series that we've been having up here called Breaking Patriarchy. Breaking Patriarchy. The point of this conversation is for us to think critically about the ways in which patriarchal thinking, which is institutionalized sexism, to be clear, and I'll say more about that later. How has that shaped the way we think about and do church? How has it shaped the function and practices of what we do as a religious community? So we're going to talk about that, how we might be able to change some of that thinking. But before we do that, we are going to have lots of different music today. One of them is going to be the Chimes Choir. They're going to perform. Then we're going to have a children's moment before we get to our time of just greeting one another before the kids are dismissed. So I want to, Ruth, is there anything you want to say about the song? Or you just want to? They're just going to go. Let's go. So please give them a round of applause. Hopefully that prompt of who spoke first spark something in your imagination.
So you're going to start this?
Yeah. No, I'm not. I wasn't actually. I was going to ask you a question. That's what I was going to do. That was going to actually transition from saying that to ask you the question. Because when I thought of this question, I honestly, I really did think I was curious about your experience being a preacher's kid, right? Like, what that would have been like for you, because just the little bit I've got a chance to know your father, I know that that would be contrary to his particular stated beliefs, but there's a structure around him, right, that would kind of normalize things. And so, yeah, I'm curious to your answer to some of those questions that came up, or some of the questions that we were discussing for the conversation.
Yeah, so I was raised by feminists in central Nebraska. My mom is watching the live stream today, so shout out to my mom, Maureen, who founded the first National Organization for Women chapter in Hastings, Nebraska.
Wow.
When I was a little baby. So I was aware of, like, patriarchy as a concept, aware of sexism. But the thing that came to mind when you said, when was I first aware of patriarchy, was actually a moment where I got to experience an alternative. Mm. And sometimes it's not until you're, like, relieved of an oppression that you, like, recognize what you've been living with for so long. For me, when I started seminary at the Claremont School of Theology in 1998, my first semester, my four core academic classes were all taught by women, like powerful, esteemed women, each of whom inhabited her like power, her role, her authority in a different way. And so it was the first time that I had like a model before me that women can like do leadership in distinct ways. I think prior to that, most of the women that I'd seen in leadership in the church sort of like did it like a man, mm-hmm. you know, like even yeah. wore the power suit. Now you're like dating me, you can like
power suit
fashion will did allow you, you to have, place me in the timeline of the history
did
of the world.
Dr. Detroyer, your first
I
semester?
Had Christine Detroyer
yeah.
for Hebrew Bible.
Yeah.
I had Marjorie Suhaki for my theology class, who teaches like the grandma that everyone wants.
Yeah.
With a like tenderness, but also clarity and authority. I had Mary Elizabeth Moore, who is a deeply like thoughtful, careful, and compassionate person. And I had Ann Taves as historian, who's like bolder, a little like inhabits a little more masculine sort of style of power. But anyway, there were like four different women, and it was like, wait, there's space for this in the world, there's space for this in the church, for women to bring a like distinctive different voice. And so it also it at the Claremont School of Theology, there was also a clear like place and welcome for queer folks in leadership, and which expands it even further. And you realize that these rigid expectations about what a leader looks like are unhelpful for a lot of us, for cisgender straight men and for trans folks and for queer folks and women.
Yeah, part of the reason I asked about who you had is because, just for those of you who know, like three of the women that you mentioned are like world famous scholars. You know,
right? Like they're not messing.
Yeah, like these are like, you know, like just world famous scholars, and so that, and there's a certain way in which they carried themselves that definitely that two of them were still there that I had the pleasure of learning from, and yeah, it did change the dynamic of what it means not only be an expert but how one has to teach, you know, embodying their own sense of self and identity. I know this question. I actually, after I called my mom because I wanted to. I think it through in terms of remember the experience accurately. But we had bounced around quite a bit because of difficult circumstances in my family. We had finally found a place to settle in Battle Creek, is where I spent most of my life in Michigan. And we were trying to find a church to go to, and I grew up Baptist. And so we went to the local, it's a pretty small town, like at that time, maybe 40,000 people. We went to the local Black Baptist church, like the main one that people go to, like the larger one. And we went there for a few weeks, and then my mom was just like, yeah, we can't go here anymore. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. But then I had never really asked her why as much as I just paid attention to what was happening around us and the way in which not only she was being treated by people in that space, but particularly how she was being treated by the senior pastor. And he had created this space not only of power over, which is kind of typical, you know, unfortunately, in some of those spaces, but very much a predatorial, sexualized kind of power. And she had been made to feel uncomfortable multiple times by him already. And just her intuition was like, this isn't for me. Something here doesn't feel right. Doesn't feel like the space I want to be. And that ultimately is what led us to the Methodist Church. Because the other large church in the city...
We're not so bad.
Exactly. Was actually a Black United Methodist Church. And I had never been to a Methodist Church before. But it was structured so differently. And we had... that laid the groundwork for me to end up being in this space. And I remember I was about the age of those young men back there. Like, I was about that age when I do that. See, this is teaching, right? You do that because then they force them to be like, whoa, got to pay attention. So, and I remember that for me, what it did, I think, was it made me skeptical in terms of trusting clergy. That's the impact it had on me. Like, as I left that space, I was like, there's something about people in power, particularly when you have a man in power in that space, that makes me, something inside me was just cautious. It made me more cautious. And that stayed with me through, that was one of the struggles of my call, was dealing with and reconciling the ways in which I've seen men abuse power, particularly when it comes to, cheating on their spouses and all these other kinds of things when they become a pastor. And that lingered with me for a long, long time. I know one of the things, Molly, that I wanted to, ask you was thinking about, I guess, as a way to kind of get to this question, one of the things I at least wanted to mention was about how we got here, like how we got to this particular space of patriarchal thinking in church. Because it's not, when you read the Gospels, I mean, you see Jesus seemingly with quite a bit of women, and that Jesus not only working with but empowering women. And so what happens is you have, even during the times of Paul, there's this, and I mentioned this actually in the sanctuary sermon last week. Paul was complicated when it comes to women because there's a way in which he's kind of ambivalent, where he's kind of like, well, women have power in some space. We should recognize that power and treat them as leaders. But also in his thinking, he's like, oh, it's almost the end times. Jesus is coming, so we don't have to really worry about anything. And so there's some things that Paul says that aren't as poetic as the baptismal creed that we read today. They're like, oh, we're all kind of the same. Obviously, I'm sure you're familiar with passages where, women are supposed to be silent and all those other kinds of things. And so this tension that arose during this time of early Christian history was that you have a patriarchal Roman culture that says men have a certain sense of power over others, and you have a Christian emerging Jewish sect that becomes Christianity that tries to like disentangle and demolish these boundaries, right? And it really wasn't until, and I know for those of you who are historians, you may find this interesting, but I do need to have this context because I think it's important. It wasn't until you had the merger of Constantine and the acceptance of Christianity as a part of Roman Empire that you begin to see things change, that you begin to see a concretized change of women aren't supposed to be in power. And also there's a shift where the development of what becomes just war theory begins to emerge. And I think there's something to be said about the way, yeah, exactly. Somebody's like, it hits different when you think about like, wow. So something happens, there's a space where women become less and less empowered, and then you have this emergence of this way to theologically justify war, because up until that time, one of the primary tensions between Romans and Christians had been their refusal to do military service. And so really that is the tipping point for kind of what laid the groundwork for us to be here. Even though we can look at the text and see one thing where that brought us because of trying to fit into a broader Roman culture was something completely different. And I would argue antithetical to like where we are. And so I'm curious, like when we think about that, like the impact of patriarchy, like, how do you see it as in having had impacted the church kind of writ large in your experience?
Yeah, so I was just last week at the Reconciling Ministries Network Convocation, which is the, sort of caucus group network within the United Methodist Church that's been advocating for full inclusion of LGBTQ folks, just celebrating their 40th anniversary, which occasioned a lot of reflecting and storytelling from the early days of that piece of the movement and from where we are now. I was talking to a colleague who whose wife is an Episcopal priest, and she helped him frame this idea that she calls a glass cliff. It's the first time I've heard this. Mm. Maybe other folks have talked about it. But we're in a very different moment in the power of church, especially in U.S. American culture right now, where our sort of role in the broader society, our power, has shifted dramatically. U.S. is an increasingly pluralistic context. Being the United Methodist pastor in a town when I was a little kid in Nebraska, it was like time travel and geographic travel, meant that you were like someone of consequence in local politics and local community. You like had the ear of the newspaper and the press, and that's shifted a lot, the role of the church. And the you can see the like decline of mainline Protestant churches that maps on top of our willingness to give leadership roles in the institution to women and people of color and queer folks. And the danger is that that becomes an easy way to see, like, see what happens when you put a woman in charge. But these changes are, you know, predated the empowering of more diverse people into leadership roles. But I've been sort of thinking about how it's sort of a contrasting motion to what was happening as the power of the church was consolidated under Constantine. It's a like different moment for the church. And I think there are certainly Christian churches that have responded to the decline of the power of the Christian church in the U.S. by like re-entrenching into older forms of our understanding of power, into masculine and patriarchal ways of doing things. It's certainly a tension in the United Methodist Church. I think that a lot of the homophobia that has divided the church is rooted in sexism, rooted in patriarchy, because anyone who's other than the sort of cisgendered straight male leader, and of course, you know, you have to acknowledge that all this is intersectional too, and it has consequence for how we understand and make sense of white supremacy, because in the sort of traditional church, of course, it's a white, straight, cisgender male who's in leadership, and all of the ways that we become more diverse. You mentioned Paul's words that we read, that Nate read for us so beautifully just a few minutes ago, and you summed it up as we're all one, right? And I think it's important to note that in this moment, he's also breaking distinctions, yep. The labels we've given that make us un-one. That's not the right... Someone can clean up. We can fix this in post.
Make us diverse?
He's breaking the things that have been the divisions that we define ourselves by, male and female, which are not really opposites each other. Our understanding of gender and sex have helped us, you know, see that there's a spectrum, but it's not really like a linear spectrum. It's more like a scatter plot of diversities. So male and female are not like opposite exactly. They're contrasting. And there's lots of space for non-binary and agender and trans folks to fit in that scheme as well, who are all like cut out when we only recognize powerful leadership or correct leadership as people who inhabit male bodies.
Yeah, I think that one of the tricky parts about, or even thinking about patriarchy as it relates to impacting the church is like, even though we can look at it from a perspective of specifically the Methodist church, which you're going to look at it from the perspective of predominantly white culture, beyond that, you know, it's not like churches of, you know, where people of color aren't patriarchal, right? And some of that has been implanted, just as like the legacies of colonialism, impressing patriarchy in certain spaces that didn't exist, but other, it's just also what developed alongside. And really, you know, it's, I would argue, and one of the things we're going to talk about when we come back for the next part is, like, how do you make sense of, like, how do you begin to try to make sense of trauma in your world? How do you begin to put things together? There's a way in which we could think about and understand patriarchy and other oppressions as a way to, for some group, to maintain a sense of control, right? A sense of, like, everything feels out of control. Give me something and some structure that can make sense of my life so I know what it is I'm supposed to do. I know where I'm supposed to go, and I know how to fall in line. And that feels good. We like that kind of normalcy. We like that kind of at least knowing what to expect.
And even if I hate it, at least I know
the rules are. Exactly. And you know how to play the game. You know how to fit into that space and perhaps bend it slightly, but not step too far out of line. And so when you begin to challenge those structures, some folks who are open to that challenge, as you mentioned, those churches perhaps evolved and changed and become something hopefully like we're trying to become today. Other churches that resisted it do become entrenched, because for them, it's the fear of what is out there, the fear of dealing with their actual own internal anxieties around what's and how the world is changing around them. And so much of, I think, breaking patriarchy at church is learning to deal and work through and heal those anxieties and those fears. And so that's what we're going to talk about in the next part of our worship. I want to invite the band to come up as we move into our time of prayer. The Loft has a tradition of what we might say an embodied style of prayer, meaning that during this song, we invite you to move. If praying for you, if it feels most comfortable to you, if you want to get up and go kneel at the altar to really express your own prayers to God, there's an altar over in the corner underneath the Pride Progress flag. You can kneel down and express your prayers to God in that space right there. There's also a candle lighting station over in the corner. This is an opportunity for you to light a candle as a means of intentional prayer, a time of specifically identifying a concern that you want to lift up that's meaningful to you. Or perhaps there's something on your heart that you just need to write it out, something that's good or whatever, something you know you need to just get it off your chest. There's a prayer wall over in the corner that we invite you to write down what that is, fold it up, put under a rock, and have confidence to know that we pray over those prayers every day. So the space is open for you to engage these stations as you feel moved.
Dr. Carter, I want to hop in here.
Yes.
And apologize for getting a zinger at your expense at the beginning. I want to say that it is such a joy to be in a place where the cisgender straight men open up conversations about patriarchy. And I hope to be the kind of colleague who, as a straight white woman, opens up conversations about race too. These issues are interlapping and overlapping and intertwined. And sometimes it's helpful to say, let's talk about the way patriarchy influences this, because pulling that distinctive thread adds nuance to the conversation. But it's part of a larger garment that is interconnected, intertwined, and I'm grateful to be a part of this.
I thought it was funny, so it's totally fine. I was like, dang it. I didn't see that one coming. So, no, I thought it was funny. You know, I'm curious. I mean, we picked this passage, even though it's short, and there's a lot of context around it. But I know you had mentioned being at the Reconciling Ministries event, and there's so much, I think, at those spaces that a lot of times if we find ourselves as clergy or as people who are in affirming churches, churches that are trying to break patriarchal thinking in the ways in which it impacts us in so many ways, that, again, Paul becomes, like, complicated in so many ways. And so I'm curious, just kind of what do you think is a kind of a theological, like, what's the problem that confronts us, and what do you think some of the solutions are? Where are some other creative ways of thinking about solving this and confronting the theological issue of patriarchy?
Yeah, I don't know if Paul knew what he was doing, but I think he gave us some really good tools for dismantling patriarchy. And I love this list that he chooses of, in Christ there's no longer Jew or Greek, slave or free, male or female, because it's a list that's sort of we can represent as binaries, but they're really like contrasts, and they don't represent the whole of the options, right? So Jews and Greeks weren't the only people in the world, right? But they were two different identities that were in proximity to one another and intention, but this doesn't invalidate the existence of people like elsewhere on the planet, right? But helps us think through what has become a tension. And I think that is so important. There was an article I read in the Christian Century a number of years ago, an interview with a person who is an ordained deacon in the United Methodist Church. At the time of the publication, they were identifying by the name M. Barclay, but since have changed their name to M. Jade Kaiser. M. is a trans, non-binary church leader and talks about these oppositions that we sometimes phrase as like binary opposites, but that are much more complex.
Yep.
And they're not the only two categories that God creates in. So male and female aren't the only two options, in the same way that day and night aren't the only two options, because we have like twilight in that moment just after sunset that's kind of dusky. There are other options. And M also provided helpful insight that was changed my way of thinking. M defines their gender not as in between male and female, but as something beyond it.
Yep.
It's not a linear spectrum with two polar ends, but a more complex way of thinking. And I think Paul's list makes space for us to think in those new ways. Slave and free are not the only two ways of being in the world. You can be like legally free, but bound by debt, obligations, culture. So there's just lots of space. And what Christ is doing is breaking down those distinctions that have held us from seeing. When we talk about the patriarchy, I, of course, always think of the Barbie movie.
I know. And actually, it's I will say I did.
Did you see it?
I did see it. I saw it. I watched it twice because I knew you might talk about it. So I had to make sure I was ready.
I work it into every conversation. I think there's a whole like Walter Brueggemann like analysis to happen. But one of the things I love about the Barbie movie is it so like so clearly presents like Barbie Land is a like inversion of the sort of real world and the patriarchy, but it's just like putting women into the roles previously occupied by men. So men become accessories, Ken only exists in the gaze of Barbie, and women are in all the roles of leadership, which it turns out like doesn't really get us to a better place, right? It's not just flipping entirely over that solves our problems. It's like breaking open that gets us there. And I think that's what the movie's about. It's a great film.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's funny. I think it gets us, I would say it gets us to a better place, but maybe not like the ultimate destination.
Right.
Yeah. Like I feel very confident. And actually, I was talking to Lauren Smith about this. And to me, the pandemic was the primary example of when I talk about politics and political distribution of power. If you look at the data, the countries that were led, that had, I think they all have cisgendered women as elected officials, those countries, by any way you want to measure their response and recovery from the pandemic, just far outdid countries led by men. Just data. The data says, you know. And so what does that say, right, in terms of how we are hurting ourselves, right, by not having a more inclusive way of thinking about how we even structure not only the church but our country. And so in my mind, I'm like, would there be as much war if it was just 50-50 split? I'm 100% sure there wouldn't be. Like, you know, and that's for lots of different reasons. And so on one hand, I look at Barbie Land and I think, yeah, I'd be okay with just being a circuit court judge. You know, I don't need to be on the Supreme Court. Like, it's okay. You know, we can work our way up. It'll be fine. You know, so yeah, like, it is not utopia, but it is a pragmatic on the way there.
Right, but it's still stuck in this binary way of thinking, right? And it's problematic for really overcoming it because there are men who are gifted at traditionally feminine sorts of roles in the world, who are nurturing and who want to do differently, who are similarly trapped by the patriarchy, that the way to be a man is to fit into a particular mold. Not only to, you know, beyond that, to think of all the people who don't fit neatly in a gender category or who were born in a body that was identified with a gender that doesn't fit their identity in our navigating trans space, there's just not enough space.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I want to ask, you know, and I think about this a lot with respect to like racial reconciliation and repair, in terms of, I always find it, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this. I'm just going to say it, and I want those of you who are not people of color who just feel what I'm saying. Like, there's a way in which Black people especially are racialized to be seen as angry and violent, right? But in my mind, I know that if we actually were angry and violent, like, given what has happened to us, right? If we actually responded in a way that's angry and violent, like, you would know we were angry and violent. Because look at what has happened, right? And so I know that that's not true. And yet I also know that there is hurt, pain, and suffering there. And there's a lot of people who are bitter. And so one of the questions I have for you in terms of, I think the church has to move towards healing this process of reconciliation. And so, like, how do we, in that particularly women and other marginalized genders, begin to heal from the trauma that patriarchal thinking has inflicted upon the church? What does that look like for you?
I'm so grateful for spaces and communities that I've had where I could gather with other people who have experienced the trauma of patriarchy to share with one another and to tell the truth. I think a part of healing is acknowledging, being seen and seeing one another and being able to tell the truth of what has been so that we can do differently. I think that matters. And I think it's why there are important communities of people who are marginalized in any way. It's important to have spaces that are, you know, distinctive and can, where we can hear and be heard.
Folk. So even just naming, acknowledging what's happened, like making sure you're being seen is an important part of that healing process. Because you can't just say, oh, I want to, and, you know, I think people don't want to skip over that part. I guess what I'm getting at, that, I think that's part of the point of this series is for us to really sit in what we have done to each other rather than just skipping over it.
I had a long relationship with a man who was unhoused in Redondo Beach when I was pastor there. He was living with schizophrenia, and he often was in need. He came by. We had lots of long conversations. At the time, my office administrator, who was like the first person that you'd greet when you came in the church office, was a man. And then my office was like through his office. And so I talked to this guy like, I don't know, 10 times. We had long conversations. But I guess he didn't like really absorb that I was the pastor. Mm. Like, so one Sunday he came to worship and he sat in the back and laughed every time I did something pastoral. So like I got up to the front and welcomed people to worship and he just sat there and was like, like it was Youth Sunday. So I was really worried about what was going to happen when the young people got up to talk. If he was just like in a laughing space that day, but he didn't find that funny when the youth had the microphone because they were like youth leading worship, which fit in his scheme of how the... But then, like, later I got up to do another pastory thing and... all of it just to say, I think part of what we do as church is just, like, practice the sharing of power in ritual roles as well as in our, like, institutional life. And I feel that gift and responsibility every time I walk... like up the aisle of our sanctuary. That's such a like hierarchically arranged space that, you know, you walk up into that pulpit. And every time I walk up into that pulpit, I feel the gift and responsibility of getting to speak from it in this body that I have. And it's a gift when I can share it with other people whose bodies also are outside of the expectation of who has the authority to be speaking from that place.
No, I think it's such an excellent point because so much of what, you know, we have to, there are so many benefits, right, to the ways in which we can think about what it means to break patriarchal thinking or shift away, move away consciously from patriarchal thinking in the church. And there is a cost that some of us are going to have to give up. Those of us that are in power, the cost is that you have to share power. You have to share control. And again, as I said earlier, like, I think some of this is the fear of what that would look like, the fear of experiencing a letting go, right? Of having trust that folks who perhaps haven't been empowered to do this work in particular ways can, in fact, lead and do that work. And the reason I think that's, is we've just been so socialized to, within these strict norms, that it feels awkward. It makes people laugh. It makes people uncomfortable because they're just like, what does that look like, right? I cannot tell you how many times I would have student evaluations that were not reflective of what I was saying, but as reflective of somebody's experience of what I was saying because of what I look like and how I'm presenting to them, how they experience this, you know, 6-foot-tall black man in front of them, right? And I'm sure that same thing happens to you. And so until we begin to wrestle with, well, what's coming up within me that's causing me to feel this way when this person speaks, I think that's crucial. But we gain so much in terms of, as I said, an awareness of the giftedness that we actually have that is latent among us that we haven't tapped into. And so I guess as a way of wrapping up, I'm wondering, Molly, if there's anything you want to say about how breaking patriarchal thinking, like the gifts or the benefits or the tangible ways it can just help, as you see it, help us as a congregation.
I think it's just so much more fun. I don't want to trivialize this, but when there's only one way to do leadership, a lot of us don't see ourselves in that position when there's one way to order and organize ourselves. And you can be a man and not feel like there. I mean, our Bible's full of stories of firstborn sons that weren't the right one to inherit the authority. Like, there's this, and this is a deeply like American story too. Like, just because of the circumstances of your birth, it shouldn't determine what you can be in the world. We've all felt the pain of, I suspect we've all felt the pain of like a misfit of an expectation that will fill a particular role in our families or workplace or whatever that doesn't match like our sensibilities, our gift, our like personality. And I think once we break open those clear, rigid expectations about how things work, then there's like, we can all like, you can do you in a way that is joy. And I'm thinking of the, I was listening, this is maybe taking us in the wrong direction. I was listening to Leslie Jordan's gospel album this week. He was like, he died this last year in a car accident. He was an actor who played like really character roles, a very like stereotypically gay Southern man. He was on Will and Grace back in the day. He grew up in Tennessee, and his dad told him to like twirl the baton in the living room, not the front yard, because it would be safer for him. Anyway, he recorded this album of gospel songs, and he's just like singing them out of like love. And I love listening to it because he's clearly treasures this faith that he experienced as a child, even in a church that didn't have room for him then. He found in the music like a thing. And then getting to him to just like joyously sing these songs, and he got to like duet with Dolly Parton and Eddie Vedder, and it was like a cool album. But just this like, it's just like you get to watch him like glow and float as he gets to be the person that he's created to be, not fitting into the clear constraints of what, you know, men are supposed to be. And I think that's true for so many of us, that there's just like freedom when you make room.
Yeah, I mean, imagine what it would be like if we didn't feel constrained to fit into these particular kind of labels and spaces. I think, you know, the young adults in our young adult group have talked about how many of them have felt, and maybe those of you can just remember the way you feel pressure to study a certain thing in college, like your parents, like, are only going to pay for college if you do this thing. And the ways in which we can apply those rigid logics, and your parents are doing that because they love you. They're trying to help, right? But in the process of actually doing that, they are constraining you from becoming who you are called to be. So what would it look like for us as a church community to be open to the transformative power of God, to recognize and actually believe the power of the Holy Spirit can lead us to where we're supposed to go, and to not restrict those labels beyond the fact that we are called to love each other and to see where that takes us. That is both empowering and also probably nerve-wracking for so many people. My hope is that you can all think about how this is empowering and think about what that looks like for you in the church. And so the question that I would love for y'all to think about for the next few minutes is to take serious how you particularly might help break patriarchal thinking and practices at Westwood UMC. And I want to toss out one suggestion, because I can.
Because I got the microphone.
Because I have a microphone. One of the things that I experienced this past week when I took Isaiah to his field trip, I was the only male chaperone. And it was all, you know, all women there. And it's fine. And it's interesting being the only man in a space, and how that, even how the kids respond to me is different, right? And I'm very much aware of this. And I want us to take seriously the importance of just recognizing what it means for us to have a children's ministry that's predominantly run by women. What does that mean? What does it say about how we actually think about the actual labor of care, and who's burdened with that responsibility, or who gets to experience the joy of it, right? But let's be fair, sometimes it's a burden. It's okay, you know, let's be honest, right? But what does that look like? And so I want to say that as a means of encouragement for us to take seriously what that means, because the only way we're going to begin to challenge and break some of these norms with our children is for them to actually see us breaking these norms. So let's spend a few minutes in conversation, and then we'll move to wrap up worship with music and some announcements.
Good morning. Good morning, everyone. My name is Wesley. My pronouns are he, him, and I serve as director of Laugh Connections. And this morning, I have your announcements. So as you all know, it's Fall Festival Sunday. So today's the Fall Festival, and I've been given some stage directions for all of us joining for chili and for desserts. If you could exit that way and go down those stairs so you start at the chili line and then move through the rest of the condiments. So just a little stage direction. Everyone's got this. So a few things happening in the life of our community. Everest, our new youth director, found an apartment in Los Angeles. Great. Incredible. It's hard to do. And so on Sunday, October 29th, we're doing a housewarming for Everest at 12 p.m. in the Wesley Room. Debbie Shears collecting gift cards. Tonya Seamus McCohen is collecting home goods. Tonya's over here. So this information is in your email. So if you have space and you have some things that you want to donate, please bring them next Sunday and be a part of that celebration as we help fill their home. What else is happening? This week in groups, I think we have maybe a slide for groups. Wonderful. I think that's mostly correct, yes. So this week, the men's group is meeting on Wednesday. That's October 25th. So if you're interested in being part of the men's group, let me know. We can get you on that list. Our Westwood group is also meeting. That's on Thursday at Dr. Carter's home. And then this coming Sunday, our Culver City group is meeting. So if you're interested in any of those groups, please let me know. We can put you on those lists so you get those updates. Also on your table, we have a new little QR code. I'm sure we're all familiar how to use QR code. If not, let me know. Super easy. But you can find all of the giving information, how to sign up for the newsletter by scanning that QR code. But importantly, the thing that we've added is our new mutual aid network, our mutual aid group. So if you're willing to be a part of that group, you can find that information and sign up through that QR code. Or if you're someone who's looking for mutual aid, you can also submit that request using that QR code. So those are announcements. Pass it over to Dr. Carr for the benediction.
I want to note that for mutual aid, I want to encourage people to sign up to be. There's two different ways. You can either request aid if you need assistance, or you can sign up to be basically a respondent, someone who actually helps people in those situations. And so even right now, we had someone submit. We do have someone that's looking for housing. I think they're looking for a 3-bedroom, and they're in a kind of a crisis situation in terms of trying to find something local, relatively local. I mean Los Angeles. It's really something that I think it's not a huge ask. It's just a way for us to be in communication. And I've reached out to some, and some have already reached back out to me. And thank you so much for your engagement in those issues, because that's really how we become a community. That's how we really help each other and how we can learn to trust each other and grow together. I also want to let all of you know, thank you all for being here. And with respect to what we do for offering in this space, you can either scan the QR code and you could give online, or there are two baskets, I think one at each door, even though you're supposed to go out of that door. So maybe if you just kind of do a loop-de-loop, if you want to give, if you need an offering envelope, feel free to put something in that space as well. I want to invite you to give a round of applause to our band. Where is our? And Josh, let's talk about you too. You were playing, like Josh. I know. Just make sure you're included. You're included. And lastly, I was reminded that we are in the midst of someone who has been at this church for so long and actually began some of the dismantling of patriarchy earlier, Reverend Dr. Sharon Rhodes Wickett, who... And I want to acknowledge her because I know of the work that she did in this space, but also some of you may not know of the role that she played in even me being in this conference. Like, she has been a part of my life for so long. Thank you. Receive now the benediction. May the love of God go with you as you leave this space. May you find strength in Christ, that we might model ourselves after him, that we may find within ourselves the courage to break the boundaries that we have created that can separate us from each other, so that we might be open to experiencing community, to breaking the hierarchical and patriarchal structure that has infected our church. And may the Spirit of God lift you and empower you such that in those moments when you are tempted to fall back into old ways and old patterns, you find a sense of renewal, a sense of purpose, something that is alive within you that continue to pull you towards love. May we be those who God has called us to be. Let all of God's children say, amen. So remember, we're supposed to go that way when you leave. Thank you all, and see you all next week.